I don't need to tell you that this pandemic has caused a lot of changes in all of our lives, but some of those changes are going to stick. We're going to find out which ones are and which ones aren't. We're talking to futurist Mark Palatucci. He's an associate at the Future Today Institute. Things are never going to be quite the same, are they?
There is really no going back to normal. I think it's actually wiser to look at the pandemic as a form of a trauma that we are collectively experiencing. And so those changes we talk about are going to be integrated into our lives. And as with any victim of a trauma, we can't avoid the effects of it or the memories of that trauma, but rather address it head on, accept the changes, and learn to live with it.
So Mark, as a futurist, what do you think the biggest change is so far?
So thinking about some of the specific changes, a heightened awareness of the sort of unseen microbial world that is at work around us. So hygiene and cleanliness goes from an issue of propriety and manners to an issue of life and death. And physical intimacy is going to necessarily become a bit more scarce and perhaps regarded as of higher value than before. There's no more room for what I like to call sort of promiscuous platonic physicality. Handshakes or hug, it's kind of a sad thought, but these sorts of things are frankly unnecessary in many cases.
So let me understand this. Casual things like high fives and handshakes are probably going to go away, but physical touch is going to only be saved for people that you're truly close to, like family, friends, lovers?
I think that's right. I think that we're going to see essentially a phenomenon wherein physicality has to be earned and there has to be a significant level of trust for one to engage in physical contact with another. And so, like you said, whether that's a close friend or a lover, depending on the nature of the relationship, that physicality in any form is going to be essentially of higher value and a bit more scarce, and necessitate a heightened level of trust.
So throughout human history, we've moved from puritanical times to promiscuous times, back to puritanical times. And it seems like in the late 20th century into this century, there was no longer a discrete value to physical contact. It was kind of free, right? Free love. No longer going to be like that.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny to think about those swings back and forth throughout history of maybe heightened physicality or relaxed attitudes towards physicality versus those more puritanical attitudes that you referenced. And we may have thought we were on sort of a trajectory that was never going to go backwards or never going to sort of reverse, in which physicality is accepted, it's encouraged. And to be clear, physicality is a great thing and is quite necessary in many people's views, a necessary aspect of life. It is life-giving and life-affirming. However, we now find ourselves in a situation that not many people expected, that in fact is driving us back to what seems like a more conservative attitude towards physical relationships. There's long been, let's say, a school of thought around the dangers of promiscuous sex, let's say.
Right.
But we've never really been confronted with the dangers of promiscuous platonic physical interaction, something like a handshake being a significant threat or a risk to our health.
We're talking to futurist Mark Palatucci, an associate at the Future Today Institute. You see people stuck at home right now, and they're kind of getting over each other in their homes. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, families mm-hmm. are sort of fraying a little bit because it's, you know, there's too much familiarity at the moment. But what does that tell us about future relationships? Are we going to look for different things?
You know, it's a very fascinating question. I think there may well be almost a consolidation of relationships. As you mentioned, families and couples, even roommates are being forced right now to quarantine together. It is putting a strain on certain relationships, but there is sort of a common wisdom that if you can survive a trauma with your partner, with your friend, with your family members, then the relationship you have with those individuals is actually strengthened as a result. It's going to be, I think, because of the societal shifts we're going to see and the necessity for prolonged social distancing, there's going to be a significant period before we find ourselves able to socialize in dense areas in close proximity to other people. The formation of new relationships, at least in person, is going to be more difficult for this foreseeable future. So I don't know if we're going to look for new things in relationships per se, but I think we will be forced to look for those things in new ways. And I think we've already seen some of the examples of this with people who are, let's say, users of dating apps online are now scheduling Zoom calls with their potential partners. And this connects to our point earlier about physicality needing to be an sort of an earned status of a relationship. And you want to be able to sort of build a level of trust and familiarity before physicality comes into that relationship. I think a Tinder date or a Raya date that is hosted over Zoom first actually provides potentially a healthy way to forge that relationship before it becomes something physical.
Fascinating point. It always comes down to sex. One of the questions a lot of real estate people have is, are we still going to need office space now that Zoom has taken over our lives professionally?
That's another interesting question that we at the Institute have certainly been asked, since this whole pandemic began. I think that there are certain industries where proximity to either your physical resources, local networks, things like that, maybe a specialized terminal or a piece of equipment that you need to use, mm-hmm. Is going to still necessitate sort of a real-life office where employees can gather in person. I think where we'll see lasting change is in transient workspaces. So if you look at a WeWork office, for example, and you've got a small team that is reliant upon the network connection and benefits from having a desk and a workspace and the ability to congregate together, but doesn't necessarily have any specialized equipment and is, as a result of COVID, becoming more familiar with the functionality of Zoom and perhaps becoming more efficient in their work. They've got thrown into the deep end with Zoom and the teleconferencing, and they're going to adapt to those types of services. They may find that paying rent is no longer necessary.
Everybody's looking at their office, whether it's a WeWork office or their regular office or whatever it is, as an incubator. These companies are going to look at it and go, do we really have to spend this money on real estate? If we have 100 employees, do all 100 employees have to be there 9 to 5, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, whatever it happens to be, mm-hmm. working 25 to 30% of them or whatever, work at home, or maybe only 25% have to be in the office? I mean, that seems like the future is writing itself. And as a futurist, Mark Palatucci, what's being written?
Well, The reimagining of the typical work week is something that was already being discussed in many, many circles, specifically around the effects that automation will have on many industries and many lines of work. And one of the natural effects of that automation taking over more and more tasks of the worker, not only in sort of a white-collar office space, but also automated robotics taking over some of the factory responsibilities, yeah, and the factory jobs. One of the natural effects of that is that the human being, while he or she may not lose their job entirely, will not be needed for as many work hours per week as in previous societies.
Oh, wait a second. Perhaps... Hold on. Tell that to my boss. That is not true. I mean, really, honestly, you hear from people who are like, oh my God, I'm working from home, but I'm working twice as long and 7 days a week because the expectation is, well, you're home. We can get a hold of you. We know where you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so those are some boundaries and some sort of parameters to the new scenario that need to be established because we've all been thrown into this situation. And there is the sort of the rule book is out the window. We need to write some new rules, and those are going to happen within organizations on a case-by-case basis. But it also means that the worker, him or herself, may need to speak up and explain that there are going to be times when they're not available, even though it's during the typical 9-to-5 workday, especially now that they're also having to look after children who aren't able to be in school at the same hours or take care of other responsibilities that, yeah, wouldn't have fallen on them in our previous setup.
So I just want to jump through some bullet points here and see what you're thinking sure. about. Homeschooling, will there be more of it or less of it?
I think it's at an all-time high at the moment. Now, this is amateur homeschooling in many cases. Schools, I can say from personal experience, I have no children, but those friends of mine and associates of mine who do have children have seen study packages be sent home with the children who are no longer able to be in schools, classes being hosted online via Zoom. Right now, we're seeing a much more adaptive, meant to take the place of these last few months of school that many of these children and these students were missing. But that is essentially what we could muster in a time when we had no chance to prepare. Now, if we look at the summer as a prep time for schools to potentially put together more highly structured curricula that can be administered remotely, we may see that the system works a bit more smoothly with the coming school year.
Will people still be flying as much into the future?
I think in the near and even midterm, the airline industry is going to suffer pretty extremely. We're seeing it right now. It's probably at the height of that extreme level where all non-essential travel is being highly discouraged. Planes are flying with a handful of seats taken.
Right. We know that's the short term.
That right there.
That's the short term.
That's the short term. And I think that, like I mentioned earlier, there's not going to be this switch flipped where we go back to normal and planes are chock full and airlines are sitting pretty once again. I think that airlines are going to have to fly fewer routes because flying a half-empty plane is just economically very inefficient. So that will be one way in which they need to adapt. Obviously, they're getting some assistance from the government, right. And they're going to have the industry is going to be bolstered by the money coming from the government. But we're going to see a significantly pared down and rolled back airline industry because the incentives for flying simply aren't the same as they were 6 months ago. Right. And especially when you look at work travel, as companies and employees, old and young, are all getting more and more accustomed to Zoom meetings, that in-person meeting becomes almost a luxury.
Yes.
Where before it might have been a sign of commitment and faith and trust that a number of executives might join together in one unified place. You know, once that comes with it added risk, it simply doesn't serve the same purpose anymore. And so, yes, I do think that we're going to see significant and prolonged effects on the airline industry, and that flight, air travel in general, will have a downtick that extends into many years into the future.
Yeah. Business travel was seen as that. When progenitors to Zoom came out and people would sit in rooms and they would talk to their offices in other parts of the world or, mm-hmm. you know, or you'd go meet a client, for example, that you're trying to sell. Well, we can meet you digitally. It's almost seen as an insult to the client. Now it's going to be seen as a safety measure for the client. And we also are learning new ways to sell into the camera. Everybody's becoming a television host in one way or another. Even grandma now has to figure out how to sell her story to the grandkids.
Absolutely.
By looking into the camera. And I think that is pretty fascinating. And I guess the last piece here, what are things that we no longer will need? Do you have a quick list?
Sure. Well, there's one that I want to touch on because it kind of already fits into a trend that Amy and I and the rest of the researchers at the Institute had identified as coming to the fore this year in particular. And that is this shift away from the smartphone and towards smart eyewear. So essentially every big player in tech right now is either working on or has already produced a set of a device that resembles typical traditional eyeglasses, but with smart functionality in it. So Amazon has frames, Alexa frames, and they actually don't even have lenses in them yet, but they have an audio assistant, the Alexa audio assistant embedded in the frames. So you can make requests to Alexa, you can execute searches, you can dictate commands to Alexa via these eyeglasses that are sitting on your face without ever taking out your phone. Now, I see the COVID pandemic as an accelerant for this shift, because you look at a phone and it's a high-touch device, and therefore it is a magnet for germs and microbes, whereas a device that sits on your face and does not need the touch of the hand to function is far more convenient and in some ways more sanitary.
Yeah, protective in some ways, too. Yeah, someone sneezes and in your face, that the glass is going to catch that, yeah.
Sure. Maybe that's an added perk. But we saw 2020 as being the year of smart eyewear anyway, and that was before COVID came into play. And it doesn't mean that everybody by the end of 2020 will be wearing smart eyewear, but we're going to see those types of devices really come to the fore and start to become more popularized. And I think that COVID is going to provide added incentive for a device that you can use with much of the functionality of your phone. And this is, of course, this will take time to adapt and evolve before you really have every function from your phone embedded in this eyewear device. But ultimately, when that does happen and does become available, I think people will be very eager to keep their hands off of a device that is much more potentially attractive to germs and microbes, and be able to rely upon this sort of hands-free eyewear.
Fascinating. Futurist Mark Palatucci is an associate at the Future Today Institute. Thank you for your time.
Thanks so much, Ro.